All right, we're continuing looking at this whole area of personal finances. You have to take control of your own personal finances before you can ever hope to expand towards enterprise. So in this session, we're going to look at probably one of the most famous and well-followed gurus in the whole personal finance world, Dave Ramsey. If you're from the United States or Canada, you've already heard his name. A lot of seminars are put on in churches. I think he has his own radio program where he talks about personal finances. But you can just Google him and go right online. It's really basic stuff. The seven things that I'm going to tell you, these are sort of his seven key things that you have to do with your personal finances, are probably seven things that you would come up with if you just sat down and asked yourself, okay, how could I take care of my personal finances better? These are kind of the things that you would probably come up with. So we're going to just briefly look at them, and then we're going to talk about the whole budgeting thing and how you might set up your own personal budget. So, there's seven baby steps. That's what he calls them, baby steps. Baby step number one is to establish an emergency fund. Proverbs 10, verse 5, this is one of my favorite proverbs. A wise youth makes hay while the sun shines. But what a shame to see a lad who sleeps away his hour of our opportunity. I grew up in the city, Grand Rapids, Michigan, but when I was in ninth grade, my father bought a farm. So I went from living into the city to all of a sudden on the farm. One day I'm getting up at like 9 o'clock in the morning, next day I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to milk the cows. And we had 100 acres, and we had a tractor, and we had a plow, and we had a plant, and probably my least favorite thing was haying season. You had to go out and cut the hay, you had to bale the hay, and then it was usually like 95 degrees out, Fahrenheit, humidity, and you had to stick the hay into the barn. You had to do haying at a particular time and a particular part of the season. If you missed your opportunity to do the hay, it would get too long, it'd get too wet, it had to be dry for 3 or 4 days, then you would do the haying. If you missed it, you missed it. Well, this is a metaphor for people's finances. The first thing that you need to establish is an emergency fund. You can't live paycheck to paycheck. You can't, people when they figure out their expenses, you know, they have their monthly bills, they have their phone, they have their internet, they have their house, they have their car, they have one thing after another, and then they add all of them up, and then they see their monthly income, and they go, well, it matches. Yeah, it matches as long as some emergency doesn't happen. All of a sudden, something breaks. Something goes wrong, and now you're behind. So Dave Ramsey says you should first establish an emergency fund. How much would that be? It depends on where you live and what the general income that people have, what people need to survive in your area. But you need at least a month or so of income, if you didn't make any money for a month, you should be able to survive at least for a month. Baby step number two, this is a big one. Pay off all debt using the debt snowball. Debt. The only debt that you should really have is on a house. When you buy a house, it's a huge investment. You buy it over time. Sometimes people will spend 30 years paying for their house. But everything else you should really buy only when you have the money. But that's not how people operate. They get themselves into debt. The problem with debt is you now have the debt that you have to pay, plus you have all the stuff that you need to do to live. Before you got into debt, you were just living, and then you ended up spending more, and you got into debt. So now you have everything you did before, plus the debt. And that just drags you down. So he talks about how you should attack debt. Now, the logical way to attack debt is to look at all the things that you own. Here he gives an example. $500 medical bill, $2,500 credit card debt, $7,000 car loan, and $10,000 student loan. Now again, these are probably American examples. You'd have to think about the examples in your own culture. Okay, now logically how I would approach this is to pay off the debt that has the highest interest rate. Regardless of whether it's a high thing or $7,000 car loan or the $2,500 credit card, probably the credit card is going to be a high interest. I would pay, first of all, the credit card because it's the highest interest. Too much of my money is just going for interest. But Dave Ramsey says, yeah, well, that's a logical thing to do, but people need to psychologically attack this whole debt thing. So what he suggests is you start with the smallest debt. So he's suggesting you start with the $500 medical bill. And what he's also suggesting is that for a brief time, it's like you're going to really work at this. You're going to go gangbusters on your debt. You're going to pay it off. And he's suggesting that you find an extra $500 somehow. That you save $500, you get a part-time job, you do something, you do whatever it takes to add $500 to your debt. So, if you start with the easiest one or the smallest one, you'd pay off that medical bill. It's gone. Now, you were paying $50 a month, so now you have the $500 that you want to use to pay things off, but now you have the $50 too, so now you have $550. So now you attack the credit card thing. This is how he says it goes. In the debt snowball, we would list the debts in that order. Remember, ignore the interest rates. Start by making minimum payments on everything but the medical bill. For this example, let's say you find an extra $500 each month to go toward that debt by getting an extra job, slashing your lifestyle to nothing, or going crazy. That's very doable, he says. Since you're paying $550 a month on the medical bill, the $50 payment plus the $500 extra, that medical bill won't even last a month. So now it's gone. Now take the $550 and attack the credit card debt. When that happens, you'll be paying $613 on the credit card, the freed up $550 and the $63 that you were paying already. In about 4 months, you wave goodbye to the credit card debt. You've paid it off. Now we're attacking the car debt. Start paying off the car note to the tune of $748 a month. And what is that made up of? It's the freed $613 plus the $135 monthly payment that you would have to pay otherwise. Anyway. In 10 months, you'll be done with that one. Once you've gotten to the student loan, you'll be putting $844 a month on it. It will last only 12 months. Because of your hard work and sacrifice, you have paid off $20,000 in debt in only 27 months using the debt snowball. Congratulations. So I hope you understand what he's saying. You have all these debts, and you're making monthly payments. That's something you have to do. Now go out and try to find $500 and put that $500 on the smallest one. Once the smallest one is taken care of, you now have the $500 plus that monthly payment that you no longer have to use. And you attack the second one. And when you're done with the second one, you have the monthly payment that you were making on the first one and the second one plus the $500, and you attack the third one. And so your ability to pay off is just growing and growing and growing, and finally the whole thing is paid off. Paying off your debts really, really works. I had an associate pastor working for me, and he was always behind in his finances. I didn't understand it. He had a good job. He's making enough money. And I looked at his finances, and finally I figured out, you know, that Ford Bronco that you love so much, it's killing you. If you would just sell that Ford Bronco, all your troubles would be gone, and in 3 years you could buy it back. He was unwilling to sell his Ford Bronco, and so he still has financial problems. Baby step number three, save 3 to 6 months of expenses in savings. Okay, to have enough cushion for life and to feel confident and secure about your finances, you really need some money in the bank. And the reason people don't have money in the bank is because whenever they get money in the bank, they think, well, I've got all this money in the bank. I want to finally buy that thing that I want. Maybe it's a car. Maybe it's a drone. Drones are very popular today. I have one. But I waited until I had enough money before I could buy one. Frank. Inside joke. So try to save 3 to 6 months of expenses. What does that mean? That means evaluate how much money you need for every single month, and then you need to save that much money times six. And that money goes into the bank, and that money you can't touch. It's not just sitting there so you can do whatever you want with it. It's there in case you absolutely need it. Number four, invest 15% income into a Roth IRA or pre-tax retirement. In the United States, we have these investment things that if you put money into them, they can accumulate interest the rest of your life. And when you retire, you can take that money out and you don't pay any taxes on it. So if you put $10,000 in and over 40 years, that becomes worth $30,000. One day when you retire, you can take all that money out and you made $20,000 on your $10,000 and you don't have to pay any taxes on it. That's a huge advantage. In other words, start thinking about your retirement. Instead of living off the government or living off your family, what can you save? What can you do that will help you with your retirement? Baby step five, fund college savings for children. Okay, this has become more and more necessary. I went to college back in the day, and it wasn't that expensive, really. And my father was the kind that said, you know, you want to go to college, pay for it yourself. So that's what I did. I paid for it myself. But in those days, you could work enough in the summer to actually pay your college debt. So when I graduated 4 years later, I didn't have any debt. And I went to 4 years of seminary. Again, I made enough money on the side to pay for it. Now, today, people are getting into huge debts. They graduate from 4 years of school, and they have $50,000 in debt. Now, my first advice to you would be to just go to CLI. It's free. If CLI had existed when I went to school, I went to Calvin College for 4 years. I don't know what today it would cost you $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to go and do that. Today, I could go to CLI, get my degree, and then from there I could go to Calvin Seminary, which is what I did, and I could save myself $60,000. With my children, I have four boys. We decided to save $5,000 for each of them a year. So that's what we said to them. This is what we're going to give you. The rest is your problem. Just giving your kids all the money to do something, probably not the way to go. They don't appreciate it. They don't work. They don't have the understanding of what things are worth, the value of things. So that's just what we did. Baby step six, pay off your house early. Now, I know a lot of you don't own a house. Some of you do. Some of you wish you did. But this is just, you know, just to you think about how money works. If you bought a house, for example, here in the United States for $100,000, or let's say you bought a house for $120,000, you put $20,000 down, and now you have a loan for $100,000. Your monthly payment is $477, not counting taxes or insurance. It costs you $47 every single month. $333 is interest. You're taking all the money from the bank, and the bank says, hey, we want some money back for you, you know, holding on to our money. $333 a month is what it costs you. So you're paying the bank. $144 actually reduces your debt. So instead of owing $100,000, you now own $850. So after a month, after one payment, you've only paid off $144. So if when you pay your monthly thing of $447, if you just added $144, whatever you add to your payment goes off the interest, goes off the principal. So if you can make an extra payment of $100 every month, you could actually, you know, on a 30-year mortgage, you could actually pay it off in 25 years. You can get rid of years of paying just by adding a little bit to your house payment. When I moved to Canada, that's where I bought my first house. Bought it for $114,000. Interest rates were at 12% at that time. So I was motivated to pay it off. So for the next 9 years, I added to it. And when I left, I only owed $20,000 in the whole thing. Get motivated to pay off your home early. Number 7, build wealth and give. Now, I've read other people talk about, other Christian authors talk about finances, and the one I like said something like the 80-10-10 rule, that you 100% of your income, 80% goes for taking care of your life. 10% goes to God, and 10% goes towards your future, towards investments and thinking about your own retirement. That's just sort of a rule of thumb. In the Bible, there's this thing called 10% or the tithe. Maybe you've heard of the tithe. And so a lot of people will do that. They will tithe. They'll take 10% of their interest, 10% of their income, and give it back to God, the church, or whatever organization that they want to give it to. Now, I think tithing is good. I personally, I do tithe, but I don't think it's the biblical norm, per se. If you read the Bible, tithing is talked about in the Old Testament, but it's never mentioned in the New Testament. Tithing is not mentioned in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, the tithe was in a theocracy. So it's the government then and the religion were all one thing, and your tithe paid for both the government and the religion. Well, today we separate those things. We have more than 10% going to our government, and then we pay our churches separately. So the whole system is different. As I said, the word tithe is not mentioned in the New Testament, but let me tell you what is mentioned in the New Testament. We're to offer our bodies, everything that we are, to God. God deserves not just 10%, He deserves 100%. 100% of my income is His. 100% of what I own is His. Every financial decision that I make is not mine alone. It's for the kingdom. The car that I buy, the clothes that I buy, everything that I do is connected to God and His kingdom. So what some people do with this whole tithe thing is they think, well, okay, I owe 10% back to God, so I pay my 10%, and the other 90% I can do whatever I want. I'm off the hook with God with 10%. No. You may give it to church, you may give it to organizations, but whatever you keep is still connected to God. How can I use my house? How can I use the things that I buy? The toys that I buy? Everything that I buy, one day I will stand before God and God will say, what did you do with that? I gave you all these things. I gave you the ability to make money. I gave you these things that you bought. What did you do with these things for my kingdom? So, you know, I don't want to be negative on the tithe, because I tithe. I think 10% is a good amount giving towards other things. But the reality is everything that I do, all my money, needs to be thought of as giving towards God. All the things that I give to my kids. Am I investing in my kids, or am I investing in my kids who are investing in the kingdom? It's always about God's kingdom. Okay, so that's the Dave Ramsey thing. You can Google it. You can watch videos of him, and there's more details with these things. But I want to talk a little bit about a budget for the rest of our time here together. What about a budget? A budget is where you sort of figure out how much you're making and how much you want to spend, and hopefully those things work out. Now, the problem with a budget is most people don't do it. It's the number one way to get in control of your finances, but most people will not do it. They don't have the discipline, let's see what the problem is. Where to begin with a budget? Let's just talk about where you would begin if you were going to do one. Start the budgeting process by keeping track of all your income and all your expenses for 2 or 3 months. Okay, just try an experiment for 3 months. Keep track of everything that goes up, every dime that you spend, every dollar that you spend. And then keep track of all the income that you get for 3 months. So, income. What's income? You might have a job and they pay you every couple of weeks, your job pay. Maybe you got some, in the United States, we sometimes get tax credits. The government gives you money back. I know, it's crazy. Live in the United States and the government gives you money back. Number three, gifts. Someone may give you money, or they give you something that you sell and then you get the money. You may have a side job that you do and someone pays you that money. That's income. All the money that comes to you in one way or another is income. Okay, then expenses. Here, I just give you a whole list. Your housing, your mortgage, your property tax, repairs, rent, however it is that you're doing your housing. Then there's utilities. Here in the United States, here in the north part, we have snow, and so we have heating and gas, electric, water, sewer, trash. Number three, insurance. Insurance on your house, insurance on your life, insurance on your car, health insurance. Food, groceries, restaurant, your clothes, transportation, taxi, bus, car payments, gas, phone, internet, haircut. You get your haircut every couple of months, that's an expense. Television, cable, whatever internet thing that you have going on, education, entertainment. So just you have to think about all the things. Every time you spend anything, you got to have a category that it goes into. Giving. Okay, if you give to your church, that's an expense. It's money going out. Saving. Let's say you save money and put it in a special account or you put it in the jar. That's money going out. Hobbies. Stuff that you buy. Miscellaneous. So, in other words, keep track of everything. Every time you spend any money for it, you buy a thing of pop, that has to go under something. Groceries, entertainment, whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. You put it under some category. Next, try to anticipate your income for each month of the coming year, 12 months. Now, if you have a job and it's a regular paycheck and the paycheck is the same, it's very easy. It's very easy to go, I know it next month and the next month. Now, if you're self-employed, you have no idea. You have to sort of go on an average over the last few years. On average, this is the kind of income that I get every single month. Next, try to anticipate your expenses for each month based on your anticipated income. Your anticipated expenses cannot exceed your anticipated income. Then write out your anticipated budget for the coming year in monthly installments. So, You make your best guess as to what your income is going to be for this month, the next month, the next month, the next month, and for 12 months out. And then, based on the last 3 months of taking care of things and keeping track of the expenses going out, you try to write down for each month, here's my expenses, here's my mortgage, here's my heating, here's my cooling, here's my food, here's my transportation. You put all those things and you anticipate for the next 12 months. So you end up with 12 pieces of paper, or you can do it on the computer, whatever you want to do, where you're estimating your income and you're estimating your expenses. Next, now keep track of your actual income and expenses for each month and compare your anticipated or budgeted income and expenses for each month. So a budget is really a guess. You're thinking ahead for the next year, and you're guessing for each month the expenses and the income. Now, you live the actual month, and you write down right next to it, okay, this is what I thought I would get in income, but this is what I really got. This is what I thought I would spend on things, this is what I really spent. And you compare, and what you'll find is sometimes they'll be different. Sometimes you'll spend more than you thought on a particular thing. But see, now you know you have to make up for that money. Because your expenses and your income should balance out. And if they don't, then you're going in reverse. So if one month you spend more than you should, then the next month maybe you better save more than you should. So that's the way the budget keeps track and helps you stay motivated. Why most people fail at this. This is the number one way that people can actually get on top of their finances. But people fail left, right, and center in actually doing a budget. Why is that? Number one, lack of discipline. You know, I have a wallet and I have some money. You know, I actually have money. My wife doesn't always let me have money, but I have some money in my wallet. Now, this money will be gone in a month, or who knows how long it will last. And I'll just pay for things. And I won't write it down. You know, it takes discipline that every time I buy something, if on the way home, I buy a bottle of pop. And I don't write it down. Well, there's a dollar unaccounted for. And for me to write it down and to figure out where to put it takes some discipline. Now, the credit card, at least, when I use that, I get a monthly statement. But it's got all these things, and I have to be able to sit down and figure out and write it down and put it into a category, and I have to add it all up. It takes discipline to do it. You have to really say, I've got to do this. Or number two, lack of tools. How do I write it down? What's the best way? And so there's programs, but people get into the program, and it's so complicated they can't figure it out. Or some people like to use Excel, but then you have to go home and use Excel. You know what you could do is just have a pad of paper. You could put it in your pocket. And you just have to keep track of each one of these things. Or number three, really, this is what it is. It's lack of motivation. People are just not motivated. You know, instead of me getting control of my personal finances, I'm going to let the bank keep track of my finances. I'm going to let the debt keep track and motivate me. I'm going to let the bank tell me when I should work hard and when I can take it easy and when I can splurge and when I can blow money, because all of a sudden the bank tells me I have more money than I thought I did, so I can now blow it. You can let someone else manage your money, or you can figure out, no, I want to manage my money. So ultimately, what you really need is motivation. Why do I want to manage my money? Why do I want my personal finances to be better? And if you're thinking about why you're taking this class, it's so that you can do ministry. See, if you have an eye on the prize, if you know why you want to do this. I'll tell you one little story. My wife and I were both going to school. I was in seminary. She was in college, and so we had all that debt. And we were living in an upstairs apartment, had one little heater, and we found it for $80 a month. It was unbelievable. That year, I said to my father, I think we can live on $10 a month, or a week, $10 a week. And my father said, no way, you cannot live on $10 a week. That's for the food, soap, all those kinds of things. Two people. And I said, I think we can. So I kept track of it that whole year. In that whole year, we went out to eat one time. One time we went out to McDonald's. In that whole year, I love ice cream. I bought 1/2 gallon of ice cream. We were going to do this. And I wrote it all down, $10, $9, $3, whatever we spent on gas, everything. I rode my bike to school. And at the end of the year, we did it. And you know what? It wasn't hard. And let me tell you why it wasn't hard. It wasn't hard because both of us are going to school to eventually be able to do the ministry that we felt God was calling us to do. You see, that grand vision made the sacrifice and whatever it took to live a certain way, it made it easy. It wasn't a sacrifice at all. And you know, because we did it that year, if I lost everything tomorrow, I know I'd be okay. Because, you know, having more is nice, But it's not what my life is all about. My life is about what God is calling me to do. And if that is what I'm called to do, that's what I do. I remember we bought a couch. And the couch, we got it for $5. We got it for $5 because it didn't have legs. We bought a couch with no legs. We just put them on bricks. And they had a little skirt, covered up the bricks anyway. No big deal. We'll take a couch without legs. Why? Because we're on the way to a mission. Why you should be one of those people who actually succeeds at this whole budgeting thing. Number one, making a budget and sticking with it is the most successful strategy in getting on top of your finances. Number two, if you cannot follow a budget in your personal life, you will never be able to follow a budget in your enterprise, business life. And that's why you're taking this class. Finally, number three, why should you be one of those people that actually succeeds at this? Because you know you're a steward. Genesis 2:15, the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it, not own it. You are a steward of your money, of your time, of your talents, whatever it is that you do. You don't own it. 1 Corinthians 4, for what gives you the right to make such a judgment? What do you have that God hasn't given you? And if everything you have is from God, why do you boast as though it were not a gift? Everything we have is God's. We are the stewards of these things. Deuteronomy 8. Be careful not to say, my own ability and skill have gotten me this wealth. You must remember the Lord your God, for he is the one who gives ability to get wealth. And if you do this, you will confirm his covenant that he made by oath to your ancestors, even as he has to this day. Again, that whole notion, God owns my whole life, 100% of it. Not 10%. I mean, you can give 10% to church, but that other 90% is God's too. Everything you save for your future is God's. Your time, your ability, the classes that you're taking here at CLI, all the plans, everything that you want to do, all the ministry, everything is about God's kingdom. And once you see that, see, that will provide the motivation to do everything.